morning. It's Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Happy Tuesday, folks. Hope your family day was swell. Hope your day off was nice. Or it was a quiet. Streets were very calm yesterday. People were hibernating.
It was nice to get around efficiently.
Oh, no traffic.
That was good.
You ripped home, man.
Getting around efficiently is a cool thing.
Yeah, it was nice. Everyone just took a day for themselves and their family.
I just noticed something there. You say Fan Morning Show, Justin Ailish. I say, when I introduce us, I say Justin and then Ailish.
Yeah, because it's all about you.
Is that just because, why is that? It just sounds better that way?
Because it's your show. It's all about you.
I don't know. I think
it's
you
Justin and Ailish.
Maybe it is.
It's men.
Maybe it is.
It's men.
No, it's not men.
It's men.
Don't go the men card.
It's men. It's all about the men. Speaking of men, I think I got God at the auto shop yesterday.
Why are you blaming men for that?
Because I unfortunately think that I am the prime target to scam at
an auto body
shop.
I think if you walk in and call it an auto body shop, by the way, they know.
I don't want to say the brand of this place.
I said it. Auto body shop. I don't even know if that's
one of Canada's most famous stores.
Is this an auto body shop? I think you're getting.
I didn't say that, but yeah. I went in yesterday for a standard oil change because my sticker was due. I thought, all right, you got some time. It's family day. I dropped it off.
If your sticker's due, the responsible thing is to get an oil change.
Okay, so I 100%. Go in there.
You haven't made a misstep yet.
I drop it off at 9:30. They call. Oh, no problem. We'll call you when it's ready. And they called me around noon. Oh no, we need to speak about these other things that we happen to
around
find.
Noon.
Yeah,
this is 2.5 hours into the auto body shop experience.
they bamboozled me. So they call me and there's a laundry list of things that they found with the vehicle that they need to talk to me immediately about. Mm-hmm. It's just
very important stuff. Critical.
And to the point that I was napping and they buzzed me multiple times. So then my do not disturb actually rang. So I thought, oh God, what's happening? Is there a show emergency, Justin? So I answer and they're like, okay, hi, Mrs. Forfar. We have a bunch of things that we found with your car. Let's run through it. And they start reading off this thing and that thing and then this thing and then racking up the price. And this is going to be this much. We have to order the part from Volvo. And when it gets here, we're going to have to redo this. And so I said, okay, hold on. And I start writing it down because to be honest, they could be speaking Egyptian.
Mm.
And so I said, just give me a moment. So I'm typing out some of the things that they're saying. And it could be like a fun game of, is this a real car part? Is this a real issue that vehicles have? Or is blank store scamming me? So I actually, and it's sad, but I'm not going to pretend to be a mechanic. I had to call my dad and say, what's going on here? Are these real things? He's like, I think you should probably go forward with it.
Mm.
My inner tie rod has...
Tie rod?
Listen,
okay,
see,
red flags going
Justin,
off at tie
this
rod.
This is how they started, ready? Hello, your inner tie rod has excessive play.
Play?
That was the sentence. I said, can you say that again slower? My inner tie rod has excessive play. And I wrote this down thinking, you're a kid, you're joking.
Excessive play on the tie rod.
$350 for that, whatever that means.
Yeah, what do they do to the tie rod?
I don't know. Didn't know tie rod existed.
Clean or replace the tie rod?
It has excessive play, Justin. Whatever that means. So I'm like, all right. They're like, you can probably wait for this one. We're not as worried about your inner tie rod. But let us tell you that we're extremely worried about your left lower control arm.
Mm.
Starting to sound a little bit like robotics here.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more into the control arm than the tie rod.
Okay,
but
so she's like, we're really worried, really, really worried about your left lower control arm. It comes with a ball joint. Looks like it might fall out if you go over a pothole. We're actually concerned about you driving. I was like, oh my God.
She sold that well.
She scared me. And she goes, you know what? We'll have to order the part in. It'll take 2 business days. And then you're going to have to get a tire alignment afterwards. Anyway, it's all racking up. We're in the 1,000-plus range now. And I was starting to see not clearly because none of these things really made sense to me. So I then did some research and it seems like.
So you didn't immediately green light it?
No. I said, you know what? I'll call you back.
See, I'm kind of sometimes a sure person. Well, you want to do this? I'm like, okay, sure.
Mm-mm. oh, I'm not getting scammed. It's like when you go and they're like, well, we had to do this. We had found this thing. Like, now, you know, we had to, your coolant was this. See, I'm screwed next
Coolant's
time I
good.
Go in there. I know coolant. Apparently my coolant was low. Anyway, yes, they're both real things and real car parts, and they have to be ordered in, and it's going to be a lot of money. But I had to check, you know, I did the responsible thing, call my father.
Call your father, do a little research. You but did green light everything, though?
Eventually, yeah. So we better win some weight
racks,
buddy.
Big bill.
The inner tie rod having excessive play, though.
I can't believe you're doing the tie rod. Excessive play?
I have to do the tie rod. At this point, I can't do one out
excessive
of two.
Excessive play is not like an emergency to me. Excessive play.
What a stupid sentence. Just tell me it's it's run down or it's rubbing on whatever. Excessive play is just, it's a ridiculous.
Give me friction
vocabulary.
Over play. Friction sounds like a big deal.
And then I found this list on Reddit of fake car parts. Mm-hmm. Some of these, like, you're telling me that you wouldn't, like, your muffler bearing? I couldn't sell you on you need your muffler bearing fixed?
Is that fake? Muffler bearing?
Is it? I don't know. I looked up real car parts, too.
So the bearing is just keeping the muffler in place, right? Like, that doesn't sound...
Yeah, your muffler bearing.
I don't know. I shouldn't even speculate here.
What about
way out of my depth?
Obviously, your suspension hook's really important.
I would. Is the hook important though? The suspension's important. Is the hook important?
Your cowl screen, COWL, cowl screen.
Could not even venture a guess of what that might be.
Well, you'll have to get your central locking doors fixed.
Manual lock, if you really need to.
Your subwoofer, that's a real one.
That's just sound.
Your Johnson rods.
That's fake. Isn't that from Seinfeld? The Johnson rod.
No.
Isn't that?
Is it?
I'm pretty sure. I'm looking that up. Johnson rod Seinfeld.
Your brake coolant. Your flywheel bracket.
Yeah, there's Johnson rod is fake from Seinfeld.
Okay, so some of these are fake and some of these are real. But you can't tell the difference because it's all made up words. When you go to get your car fixed, okay? So just make sure your your grease mounts are checked, Justin.
Grease mount seems legit.
Out of all those things I read you, two of them are real.
Really?
See?
Is the grease mount not?
I think it's in the fake list, nonetheless.
What's
I'm
real?
Just saying,
what was real?
I don't know, okay? I didn't, like...
Because I was speculating. I was kind of...
Your central locking, obviously real. Your subwoofer, you know that. Your cowl screen, COWL.
That was fake?
That was real.
Oh.
These are real things. Anyway, all I got to say is the mechanics in the text line better be up this morning.
You need
tell
a
me if I did the right
trust.
Call because this inner tie rod sounds made up and I'm spending $350 on them fixing it.
Well,
so.
At least it's not on that list of yours.
That'd be tough, but yeah.
If you saw them all, like they just went straight to that list.
The lower left control arm, that is a big worry. When I drove in, because they have to get the parts sent in, I'm driving today thinking, there goes the lower left control. Boom. Every pothole in Adelaide. Boom.
Yeah, you're just thinking about it.
Honestly, like I think my tire might come off. So this is just a PSA to just call your dad. Make sure you know what you're getting yourself
Calling
into.
Calling my dad would not be any.
CC's not a...
It
mechanic?
Would not help it whatsoever. He did, at least in part, that you have to have a mechanic that you trust.
Okay, well, I went to said generic location
you went
that
to
was
generic,
open.
I think my only experience at a generic location, I ended up paying like twice as much
yeah,
as I
thought. Yeah, I probably did that.
Yeah. They
anyway,
get you.
I need a mechanic
I mean,
text
I mean,
line.
There probably is a problem. Is it like urgent?
No, she literally
not.
Was like, don't drive. I'm like,
yeah, they
have
make
to.
It sound urgent so that you jump on board.
All right.
I don't know if I talked about this on my, I did this a couple weeks ago. My experience at getting an oil change.
Yeah.
They didn't have something. I also got my tires realigned. They didn't have something.
Well, I have to do that next
and they,
this
like,
week too.
They Ubered me home and Ubered me back. And I was like napping because it was after the show.
They always call when you're napping.
And they're like, hey, when do you want the Uber back? Your car's ready. I'm like, give me a half hour to get up. And they're like, yeah, sure.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it was great.
That's not the experience I had.
No.
I had to find my own way home on...
Although the last time they were like, hey, there's a couple things that you might want to get looked at. And then I went back, didn't do it, went back. They didn't bring it up. So maybe they tried to get me. And then I was just like, nah, you're looking at someone who's cheap.
All right. So we're getting a lot of texts in here. Inner tie rod is legit and lower control arm is legit. Sucks, but good call. We're getting Corey in the PEF saying tie rod is a part of your steering rail suspension. Excessive play would mean the bushings are worn. Control arm would be a bigger issue, but you'd want it corrected. If they're bad, it could pull the car out and are there noises and bumps? Yeah, there's some noises. Steering, yeah, I felt a bit loose. Is what they describe as true. And yes, Seinfeld. And technically every word is made up.
Johnson rod.
I'm getting some suggestions for places to go. Okay, I'll send that to you.
That's good.
And then John from EG, inner tie rod is not fake. It is indeed an essential part of your suspension. All right, thanks, guys. Don't forget your headlight fluid, Manny from Mississauga. What do you think of that?
That's what you went in for, wasn't it? Just to get the headlight fixed?
Yeah. No, and to get my oil changed.
And the headlight.
Well, yeah, but we're all good.
The headlight fluid. Don't want to get fluid in the headlight. It's a big issue.
That one sounds fake. Okay, well.
That car wash started off a chain of events. Sure, and you're $1,500 in the hole because you took a car wash.
I made it into the office, and that's all that matters. And I'll be very safe with these bumps on the way home, but we'll get it all fixed
up,
folks.
You'll have nothing to worry
about. Thanks for your concern. Send in good, trustworthy mechanics. All right. Tonight, big night. Maple Leafs hit the road for a game against Buffalo Sabres. And I forgot about the Ryan O'Reilly Sabres connection and all the buzz of this last weekend. Mm-hmm. And here we go. The former, it's an X game. It's a rival game.
Big revenge spot.
A huge revenge spot. That's going to be part of the Wake and Rake, which I'd love to win.
Now, who feels the revenge here, though?
Pay for my inner tie rods.
Is it all of is it all of Ryan O'Reilly's former teammates? Are there any left? Kyle Okposo would be one. Are there many more?
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to pull up the lineup last time Ryan O'Reilly played there.
But him and Tage have this little
does Tage
back and forth.
So the connection is... The O'Reilly deal brought back Tage Thompson, who, of course, is a
win-win for everyone.
Budding star in the league in the original trade involving, I don't even know who it was. Was that the original trade with Colorado? I'm going to have to look that up quickly. But yeah, Buffalo is still reaping the rewards, or finally reaping the rewards of the Ryan O'Reilly trade many, many years ago. Hopefully, Toronto can do the same.
Well, tonight, we get to see another opportunity. Now, what, 3 or 4 days into the Ryan O'Reilly?
St. Louis.
Yeah, okay. The Ryan O'Reilly era to see how the lineup goes. I don't believe that the Leafs skated yesterday, or we didn't see any spicy lineup takes because they had now a day where they're headed to Buffalo and they had back-to-back with travel on the weekend. And as we know, Ryan O'Reilly landed on Saturday, played Sunday, and now they're on the road for Tuesday. So haven't had the most ideal opportunities to put together a lineup. Put together some lines, but we know that on Sunday's game against Chicago, he was centering the second line with Tavares and Marner, and that was the set lineup after two opportunities for the blue and white.
Mm-hmm.
So today's question is, what's the optimal lineup? What do you want to see over, I guess, tonight moving forward? Is it a little bit of a shuffle around, see the chemistry, give him opportunity on second line, third line? How do you want to deploy Ryan O'Reilly's era? They play tonight on the road against Buffalo and then back home on Friday night against the Minnesota Wild. So there's 2 days in between.
Okay, so we're doing optimal Leaf lines.
Yeah, like based what do you want to see for Ryan O'Reilly right now?
Addition. Okay, so we talked about this yesterday, how it's kind of like a little unfortunate that it wasn't a smashing success with John Tavares and Mitch Marner, only for the sole reason that if you move into the third line, it's like, oh, it didn't work. On the second line, and now we're trying on the third line.
I do not agree with that.
You don't think that at all?
I do not agree with that.
There's a little bit of that.
I don't think Ryan O'Reilly is going to think, or anyone's going to think, that it's a failed experiment after two games.
I don't think he's going to think that, but I thought, okay, this is the introduction. Everyone's going to, good vibes. Everyone plays together, and you see what you got. And it kind of wasn't, like, amazing, right? Kind of a difficult spot.
That first shift, though.
Ryan O'Reilly travels the day in. He has that great shift. They're not really great for the rest of the day. Then you have a traveling back-to-back. How are you supposed to be that great in that spot? Yeah, maybe there's some excuses built in. Maybe we're being a little too forgiving based on what we saw. But frankly, I don't think Mitch Marner played well on the weekend. I don't think John Tavares played well on the weekend. And Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, I guess we don't really have a baseline to compare it to, but it wasn't exactly thrilling. So now, do you make a change or do you stick with it? Do you try and see what they have? Do you try and go back to the Wild? Do you try and see if they can have a better effort against the Buffalo Sabres? I think in the end, you're trying to create three lines. You're trying to really flex your center ice strength. And I think that's ultimately what they should do. And it really doesn't matter about these first two games. Okay, that's the soft landing. Let's see exactly what it looks like with O'Reilly and the two other centers spread across the lineup. So I think by optimal Leaf lines, do you want to do lines or lineup? Is O'Reilly in a third line center spot? So I'll give you the lines. Bunting, Matthews, Nylander, Kerfoot, Tavares, Marner, Yarncroke, O'Reilly, Engvall, Aston Reese, Camp, Achari. Yep. That's a really good lineup.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too.
That's exactly what yours is. Mm-hmm. So a couple notes for this. I wasn't even looking just strictly at O'Reilly because I think we have to kind of bring in, okay, what do you look like in the postseason? And with the postseason discussion, it also includes, hey, how you're aligning the core four, right? Like we kind of, yeah, you can go back and forth. You can mix and match when something's not working or is getting a little stale. You can flip them. But in reality, the Matthews and Nylander and Tavares and Marner combinations have been way better. Mm-hmm. If you look at the numbers, goal differential when Matthews and Nylander are on the ice together, 5-on-5, 32-11, 32-4, 11 against. With Tavares and Marner, it's 24-14, so pretty significant, at least 10 goals, double digit. When it's Matthews and Marner, it's around even. When it's Nylander and Tavares, it's around even. So the highest performing combinations in the core four right now and have been all season, Nylander with Matthews, Tavares with Marner.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice if they had like a sure thing playing with them on the left side. Tavares and Marner don't have that yet, and I think Kerfoot just has to slide in there and make it work unless he moves on over the next 10 days. But right now, that's your core four, and then you're just trying to see if O'Reilly can anchor a third line with three or with two other talented bottom six guys in Pierre Engvall and Cale Yarncroke.
And I think in an ideal world, Matthew Nyes comes in and gets an opportunity with Ryan O'Reilly in a month or so, month and a half.
Okay, so do yours with Nyes.
Well, Nyes would be on that third line with O'Reilly.
Okay, I did the optimal with Nyes,
mm-hmm.
and I put him on the second line. Because I know that's a stretch.
I just want to pause on that for a second.
Okay.
I think some of the biggest benefits that we might not have given enough love to is this bottom six is going to be way more... way less relying on Matthew Nyes coming in and being this hero. He might get two regular season games with the Maple Leafs. That's it. Depends if they go to the Frozen Four and win. I'll look at the schedule. But Matthew Nyes, you're going to think, can jump from NCAA into Toronto Maple Leafs lineup, play against the Tampa Bay Lightnings in the playoffs and be a second liner. I think that's asking a little much. And I also, and he could be, like, I hope he's available mm-hmm. for that spot. But I think if you're going to have three lines, those three lines can basically match up with any of the top three lines of some of these teams that you're going to play.
I agree.
You decide to get Ryan O'Reilly, your center depth now is toe-to-toe with anyone in the league. And you need to be able to utilize that, I think, in the playoffs and have three solid lines. What are some of the reasons that we've seen Leafs failure in the playoffs? Too much on the core four, too much top heavy, didn't have depth. Some of these other teams like... the Tampa Bay Lightning win the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup because they have unsung bottom six guys that actually find a way to deliver. So I would be personally putting Matthew Nyes in a third line spot, less pressure on the kid coming in.
Mm-hmm.
We love what we hear about him. We love the highlight reels that we see about him, but honestly, it's really difficult to play someone from NCAA into a top six role with two games in the regular season. And we talked to Joshua Cloak and he said, like, he gave a little bit of perspective. He was down there at his university and said he's young. Like,
mm-hmm.
he's not coming in with this veteran feel. He has he's obviously a talented player, but he's got a little bit still to learn. So I would feel more comfortable putting him in a third line spot with O'Reilly. Think about those two. They're big guys, like, size-wise. And Matthew Nyes is a tall, speedy
mm-hmm.
guy. And so that could be a nice fit.
I kind of think the opposite. I think the only place you can play him is the second line. I mean, I guess you can play him on a fourth line that doesn't really play much, but you have to have more. You have to have a fourth line that's functional. You can't be worrying about Matthew Nyes taking away some utility from the fourth line and really having no chance to actually have an impact because mm-hmm. he's not playing with talented players. I think your third line has to be of utmost importance because that third line is going to be playing against great players. And if the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to be sending a line with Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov, and there's a lot of overlap against Matthew Nyes, I don't know if you're going to be feeling particularly good about the matchups on whatever side of the ice that may come down on. I think he has to kind of be hidden and weaponized on a sheltered second line that has more manageable matchups. And I think if you're looking towards the playoffs, I think you want to try to weaponize John Tavares. You want to take the load off him defensively so that he can thrive offensively. And if he's saddled with a young guy like Matthew Nyes and they're dealing with matchups that are considered lesser, then you might be able to get the benefit out of him without the risk of having his inexperience bite you in the ass. So I feel like whatever line O'Reilly is on is going to be pressed against difficult matchups, and you need to be thinking defense first, not thinking about what pop of offense you get. So I prefer him to be kind of sheltered, hidden in that second line left wing role, which really we've been talking about since the start of the year. We've been talking about it since last year when it didn't work with Tavares and Nylander. Mm-hmm. They really haven't fixed it. Now, the value of Alexander Kerfoot at $3.5 million is like, yeah, you can do multiple jobs for us. You can kind of, you can play on the third line or second line or fourth line, and you can kind of just make it work your replacement level in a lot of ways. And that's not necessarily a compliment for someone who makes $3.5 million, but Kerfoot can kind of just plug and play anywhere in the lineup. But if you're trying to optimize a postseason roster and continue to think about trades over the next 10 days, I think Kerfoot has to be the money out to get a defenseman in. So that's the spot, I think, for Nyes. Second line, you're taking Kerfoot if you can trade Kerfoot. But until that happens, I think Nyes is your 13th forward, and you got to put Kerfoot up there.
What about the availability of Ryan O'Reilly not only being a third line guy, but against those tougher matchups in the playoffs? He can move up to a second line role, and you can have that flexibility. And I think
that's important.
And maybe the bigger picture right now is when we talk about what's going to happen over the next, I don't know, 2 weeks, is seeing him in both those spots. And that's where he started. We got to see him as a second liner. We're going to see him with a different pairing. Maybe the next little bit, we see him with a third line opportunity. But without Matthew Nyes, it's going to be a bit different to speculate what that's going to look like.
So Leafs chasing a game.
Yep.
Leafs chasing a game in the postseason. Let's say Nyes is that second line left winger. He can be replaced and taken out of the rotation. He sits on the bench for most of the game. I guess that's maybe you'd want to do that when you're protecting leads as well. But I don't think you're moving him up. Anyway, if the trust isn't there, if it's a Nick Robertson situation where it's like, okay, we got to be shortening our bench here. You nuclear option O'Reilly up, although it didn't look all that great. Kampf moves up. You still have that checking line. You have your bolstered top six.
Do you think Matthew Nyes is going to play every game in the playoffs?
No. I think a lot of this is like...
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page with that.
No, I definitely think he's going to get the opportunity. We have no idea what it could look like. I do think they have to consider trading a forward, though, to improve their defense if they're fully and wholly all in. And if that's the case, there's certainly a spot opening up, and it's probably on, like, Nyes is the first opportunity to get it, because if not, it's going to be someone like Joey Anderson or Wayne Simmonds or someone that has had their opportunity this year and hasn't been able to grab it.
This all, to me, really plays into this clip I want to play of the Bruins coach Jim Montgomery yesterday. So obviously this is all, can you get through Tampa to play Boston? How does Boston size up? We've talked about this over the last couple weeks to months, and you brought up a point that you felt strongly about, which is, do you need to go all in to beat this Bruins team this year, or do you think about next year when they're not as strong, right? And you felt confident about that. Mm-hmm. So he was asked yesterday at their media availability about the Leafs addition and how he feels about the way that his lineup would match up against the Maple Leafs. This is what he had to say.
That's a really good acquisition by Toronto. It makes them significantly better. They got three big-time centers now, and I got a guy that, I know Ryan really well, and O'Reilly's a really, really good hockey player, and he's someone that cares about winning and has a lot of winning habits to his game.
From a dressing room standpoint, when other teams are adding, is there a feeling in the room that, okay, now we have to maybe add somebody as well, or do you feel comfortable with where you are?
No, we're really comfortable. I still would take our roster over anybody else's, so we're comfortable.
I mean,
what, are you offended by that?
No, I could not agree more with this guy.
Of course.
I just think it's funny. It got a lot of pulse online.
I was expecting a little bit more of a adversarial tone.
Are you telling me there's one part of the Maple Leafs lineup? Like, if we go, let's go cross compare. Where do you feel more comfortable with the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Boston Bruins? There might be.
I mean, I think you can make the argument for the second line matching up better.
With who?
Like, what's your second line? What is it, Marner versus Taylor Hall right now, if we're talking about second line?
Is that a second line with Ryan O'Reilly and John Tavares, or no, the third line that we just mentioned? The Boston Bruins just broke a record again. They're an incredible hockey team.
They are an incredible hockey team. I mean, they are stacked, but right now, yeah, it does look pretty good. Taylor Hall's in the third line.
Yeah.
So Marchand, Bergeron, Jake DeBrusque, Zacha, Krejci, Pasternak. I mean, you're thinking Pasternak top line, and Pasternak definitely changes that. But I mean, Zacha, Krejci, Pasternak versus Tavares, Marner, Yarncroc is pretty close.
And so maybe that's where you have a little edge. But everywhere else,
Hall, Coyle, Craig Smith, third line, it matches up pretty well against Toronto's, even with Ryan O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. And I love that fourth line of AJ Greer, Trent Frederick, Nick Foligno is certainly more impressive than Toronto's fourth line. And then it's Grizzlick, McAvoy, Lindholm, Carlo, Forbert, Clifton.
Their goaltenders. It's
okay. We'll keep going.
Well, I'm just saying.
Allmark and Swayman are pretty good too. Yeah, they're a complete hockey team. It's actually hard to look and pinpoint an area for which they can improve. Yeah, they've been talking about Gavrikov, but who does he take out of the lineup? Derek Forbert.
It's a nice problem to have.
You take out Derek Forbert,
and we know that the Bruins,
Leafs could use a Derek Forbert.
Well, there you go, trade with the Bruins.
There you go.
It's just a bit humbling, you know. Jim Montgomery's asked about the Leafs making this splashy move where they are going all in. They're putting all the chips on the table, sacrificing their future. Who cares? And Jim Montgomery's like, well, no, I'll take my roster 100 times out of 100 times. And obviously, as the head coach of your team, you're going to say that. But I don't find one reason to really doubt that conversation. Then we get to your point about, should the Maple Leafs have really gone all in on this year without a lot of promise about, you're going to face off against this Bruins team, which we just said is basically better than the Maple Leafs in almost every aspect.
Okay,
is Ryan O'Reilly the factor that makes a difference? Is that this is all the intangibles, right?
Let's line match here. Okay. Marchand, Bergeron, DeBrusque. They're going head to head with Matthews, Nylander, Bunting. Do you want to pick
that's a fun
edge?
One.
Do you want to decide who has the edge, or do you just want to lay it out?
Just keep going.
Just lay it out. Okay. So that's fire versus fire. Mm-hmm. We'll say the second line and third lines will play each other. So it'll be Zacha, Krejci, Pasternak versus O'Reilly, Yarncroc, and Engvall.
Okay, well, I think the Bruins get the hand up on that one.
But can you do enough to shut them down? O'Reilly's done it to Boston before in the 2019 Stanley Cup final. But Pasternak certainly would be the biggest weapon out of that little group of six.
I've got to see which Engvall we're getting at this point.
Yes, and then it'll be Taylor Hall, Charlie Coyle, and Craig Smith versus the Tavares, Marner, and Kerfoot line, if you want to put it that way. I mean, I think there should be an edge there for sure. The best player in that group of six would be Mitch Marner, and John Tavares should not be considered lesser than Charlie Coyle by any means. And then if you look at the fourth line matchup, you know, it's bolstered by a former Bruin in Nola Chari, but Zach Aston-Reese and David Camp versus AJ Greer, Trent Frederick, and Nick Foligno seems like advantage Boston. And that's really one of the big things when looking at who they're going to play is the fourth line discrepancy. Like, the Leafs are trying, and they've improved. It looks a lot better, but it's still not that Maroon Perry line that can really make a difference, as we've seen over and over and over again. And AJ Greer, Trent Frederick, and Nick Foligno is as impressive a fourth line as you can put together, I think, league-wide.
So that's where, okay, so if you add Nyes into one of those, let's say we put him on the third line, which is what I liked. That top three depth is really good. It's really, really good, but I don't know if it's better than the Boston Bruins.
Just as a word of caution, if you have Nyes on a third line, be taking faceoffs against David Pasternak on the same side.
Why wouldn't O'Reilly play center?
Pasternak's a winger. He's the right winger. Nyes will be left winger.
Oh,
they
sorry.
Line up at center.
I thought you said that he was taking
draws. You've got a guy who could win the Rocket Richard
versus... No, it's rough. It's this guy.
A guy who's two games into his NHL
career. Deer in headlights, maybe. Or he's going to come in as the best NCAA prospect to step into the Maple Leafs lineup ever. It's just, there's a lot of question marks, but...
Well, this is just illustrating Montgomery's point.
Exactly.
Like, they are going to match up well against anyone. And it doesn't really matter
we
what the Leafs
do. Against Tampa's lineup.
They're going to feel good. You want me to do it quickly?
Sure.
Might as well.
Okay. All of this being said, there's the whole, you're a championship built team. You're the Boston Bruins. You have done it before, and you might have an edge in that sense, but the Maple Leafs just got the factor. Maybe he's the guy that in that dressing room, you're down 2-1 in a series, says, this ain't happening again. Like, I've come into this team. My dad, Brian O'Reilly,
Hell yeah, you listen to him. Yeah.
You know what it means.
Gotta play
to be
for each other, right?
You right.
Gotta like each other. Tampa Bay Lightning probably like each other. They won a couple Stanley Cups. Okay, here's the Lightning.
Okay.
Braden Point top line with Kucherov and Hagel. That goes again.
God.
That's fire versus fire.
That's good.
I'll take the Leafs there, though. I'll take Matthews, Nylander, Bunting against that line. I will. One of them's more defensive focused. I think Braden Point's obviously a great two-way player, but the best player there is Austin Matthews. If we're doing the same sort of second line versus third line thing, you got Cirelli, Stamkos, Killorn right now against O'Reilly, Yarncroak, and Engvall, maybe Knies.
Tampa.
Now, this is interesting because Cirelli, he moves around and he plays some shutdown stuff. He's their O'Reilly, so that could change. But right now, it's Colton, Paul, and it's Maroon now. I think that
Nick
would change.
Paul, noted playoff performer.
Noted playoff performer versus John Tavares and Mitch Marner. I mean, like, it's you still
close.
Feel good about that, mm-hmm. but they're feeling good about their second line matchup, I think, too. They're probably looking at it the same way. It's like, oh, you got O'Reilly? Well, we got, Steven Stamkos is going to the Hall of Fame, and that's a decent matchup for us as well. And right now, their fourth line has Namestnikov, Belmar, and Corey Perry.
Corey Perry.
And I will take a Corey Perry fourth line over pretty much anyone but Boston's.
Hey, you
line.
Know what we didn't mention in all this? Home ice advantage.
Mm.
And that might be the difference between winning a game seven or not winning game seven. If you can line match and you can put up, okay. Technically, I think I would still prefer home ice advantage if I have the opportunity to line match because, you know, Tampa loves doing that. And that could be, honestly, the tiny factor that if this is as close as it seems, like, okay, one line advantage versus this one, and it's like, it's more of a coin, not a coin toss, but it's closer than maybe how I feel about Boston. If you lose home ice advantage, what percentage difference does that give you? 5% edge in the playoffs, the margin for error is so slim, as we've seen. One tiny matchup could make all the difference. So I just think it just adds to the focus over the next couple weeks of getting home ice advantage, finding a home for Ryan O'Reilly, whether that means shuffling him up and down the lineup, which is totally fine. Like, you know, that's kind of what you jump. Like, you get the guy 2 or 2 weeks before the trade deadline, you have some time to plug and play.
Defensively, I think the Lightning are a little worse. Eric Cernak's hurt right now, but their lineup as it stands, Hedman, Bogosian, Sergachev, Nick Perbix, Ian Cole, Cal Foote. That's not what it once was.
You think that's a worse defensive lineup than the Maple Leafs?
I think it's worse than it was last year.
Okay.
And it barely held on with Ryan McDonough there. I think that there's something there that, you know, maybe you can take advantage that way. This is still the Tampa Bay Lightning, though, and it's still the Boston Bruins. And if you're having it's still the Boston Bruins conversation, well, at least you were able to, you know, checkpoint one, get past the first round.
Go look at net.
And the net's the big, that's the big
just
one. I guess that all evens out, right?
Evens out or gives advantage.
The task is tall.
And so that's why the trade deadline could be even more exciting for the Maple Leafs because you add someone on that back end that we've been circling for a while and hopefully you can trim some of the fat and you get Matthew Knies coming in, you get some more depth up front. I still think they're at least one move away from feeling confident and saying Jim Montgomery, I don't know about your 100% success feeling when you look at this Maple Leafs lineup.
And your best players finally make it so that perceived disadvantages don't matter because they just win it for you. Eventually, they're just going to have to win it for you.
Well, Maple Leafs against Buffalo Sabres will be fun. Battle of the QEW. Buffalo Sabres have a really important week here. Like, they're still in the fight, but they've fallen out a little bit of it. We're going to talk to Andrew Peters at 8 o'clock. We have Carl Gunnarsson as well at 7:30, obviously. Won a Stanley Cup with Ryan O'Reilly and former Maple Leaf. And our girl Caitlin McGrath is going to join us from Dunedin at 7. But tonight's exciting. I'm excited to see now a little bit of time with Ryan O'Reilly to settle in and Noel Achari, see what tonight brings. So maybe you send in your Wake and Rake picks at 7:30, face off in Buffalo tonight. So send in your picks for that. We want to do a little Raptors look ahead as well. Obviously, All-Star break, they're not in action. Everyone's resetting. Everybody's getting some time, hopefully, to think about their actions. So Justin and I did some Raptors grades at the All-Star break we're past the halfway mark, obviously, of the season. We didn't do halfway mark grades, kind of pushed it to post All-Star break because I think it's important to evaluate decisions that were made during the trade deadline and how this team shakes up. I'm trying to not let that influence my grades so much so, but now it's a good time to think about that. Raptors back in action on Thursday at home here against the Pelicans. But we're going to do some grades. We have a bunch of categories, including coaching, front office, bench, starters, including some of the starters individually, offense, defense, and player development.
Do you want to, where do you want to start? Because we got about, we got under 10 minutes. Do you think we get like halfway through? Maybe we just go individuals first and then we can kind of round this off a little later in the show?
Whatever you think. It's the Justin and Ailish show.
No.
Your name goes first for a reason.
Shouldn't have said anything. You're going to use that against me. Men. Let's do the individuals first.
Sure.
Yes. The man will make the decision here to do the individuals first. And I will ask you your grade for probably the highest performing Raptor, Pascal Siakam.
Okay. So this is the highest grade that I gave to anybody or anything. Let me just start with that disclaimer. I'm giving Pascal Siakam.
Don't waver.
A-.
Okay.
And that's and now, that you,
now
has
when
been,
you when you preface it with this is the highest grade, I mean A- is high grade.
No, I know, but it's it and I'm on the fence. I'm tiptoeing between a B+ and an A-.
You're using a bell curve because it's been not great.
he has been one of the few constants on this team. And he leads the league in minutes per game. So all of this is important because I'm gonna give some poor grades out to the way that this Raptors organization has been running their starters into the ground. It's good context that I don't think that the front office or the coaching has put their players in a good position. So kind of hard to just start with the player getting an A-, but in terms of what he's had to shoulder and where he's been placed and what he's had to do this year, he's the one All-Star. He's dealt with some injury for what, 10 games he lost in November, right?
I don't know if it was 10, but a chunk.
He lost some time. He's just been steady, and I think that that's giving me a boost up in his rating, because without him I don't know where this Raptors team's have been. But B+ to A- is where I'm starting with Pascal Siakam. With all that said,
you have a B++.
Sure. With all that said, there's going to be some low grades in this report card that kind of give Pascal a little bit of a boost. So that's where I'm at.
He also got my highest grade, but my highest grade is a B-.
Holy, your highest grade's a B-?
Well, what are we looking at?
No, I understand.
What place are the Toronto Raptors
right now?
No,
I get it.
How many games under 500 are the Toronto Raptors?
That's just a significant difference.
Yeah, I think it's a fairly significant difference, but I guess, yeah, I think he's performed at a B level, but he also created his own context. He said he wanted to be a top five guy in the NBA, and that's way overly ambitious.
Okay.
It is, but the expectation he put on himself was very, very high. He's still All-Star level high, although he needed to clear that bar with assistance, someone getting hurt.
Okay.
So I think it's been a B season for Siakam, given all the context, given the losing nature, given that he said he was going to be, you know, something better than he is right now. So I drop him down from a B to B minus, given that he put that pressure on his shoulders, but I can't give anyone on this team more than a B.
Okay. So Scotty Barnes, I'm giving him a B.
Okay.
He shows, and I think this is a bit of recency bias, because as of late, he's shown some really incredible flashes where we think this is the guy that we want for this Raptors team to be part of the future. He shows his Rookie of the Year skills, but the consistency for me has been the biggest point of frustration. There's been times where he looks so disinterested. He looks like he doesn't belong on this court. Then there's times where he is dominating, where we get excited about Scotty Barnes. And for me, I think I'm giving a little bit of, maybe once again, benefit of the doubt, because he's a second-year player with massive expectations on a team that, once again, hasn't really set people up for success. So I'm giving him a B. I would love to have given him a higher grade. I think that was the expectation that we all had coming into it, that the Scotty Barnes trajectory was just going to keep going up. But growth isn't linear, and he's a second-year player. But I do think there's a lot of room for, like, more consistency and maybe a little bit more drive from Scotty Barnes.
He got a B- for me as well, so he's got the highest grade, or tied for the highest grade with Pascal Siakam. I think expectations were far too high. I think they were too high.
Mine was a B, by the way.
Or sorry, my highest.
Oh, okay.
Tied for my highest. expectations too high from both Nick Nurse and the fan base. I think we expected this huge jump. I think we were kind of sold that bill of goods just a little bit. But I also think Nick Nurse is like mostly responsible for this, because as we talked about earlier on the season, like it was, there was far too much too soon. You're expecting to play every position and do everything on the court. And when you were expected to do everything, he kind of just couldn't do anything. And I think things have simplified for him a little bit. I think he's in the process of recapturing the momentum that he did garner and capture as a first-year player. I think he's primed for a strong close to the season. I think this grade could definitely improve, but he's working his way back up from a C to a B- at this point.
Okay. Fred VanVleet. This one hurts.
What do you got?
C+. I will say he's fourth in league minutes per game. Mm-hmm. But he's not been, he shouldn't be. And I think that's obviously been a reason why he's been performing so poorly. He can't find his shot. It's been really difficult for us to talk about a guy that has all these leadership qualities, all these intangibles, to not be performing at the level that we know he can be. He's a bet on himself guy. He obviously brings so much to this roster, but it hasn't been the Fred VanVleet of past. And injuries make up a significant reason for why he's a C+ for me. But I mean, there's a point where we were really concerned that we had no reason, we had no understanding why he was shooting so poorly, right? It started to get a bit, it was weird. But then he's still a red hot trade candidate. Mm-hmm. And clearly the people
still
see value in him. Still wants the bag, but it just hasn't been the Fred VanVleet that anybody wanted or expected. So unfortunately, he's getting my lowest player grade out of the four that we're doing.
My lowest player grade as well. I gave him a C. I'm just slightly under you, I think, on everything here. I think outside influences affected his season, like,
100%.
Bigly. Like, I feel like, you know, the contract stuff, what my future might lie, may lie. I feel like a lot of the narrative around him is like, okay, what's next? Not living in the present, but worrying about what's next in the future for him.
And there's a stretch where we didn't even know, as fans and as media, if we wanted to even go down the path of extending Fred VanVleet.
It only makes the water murkier, right? Based on this thing. It's like a feedback loop. It's all affecting each other, and it's making things a lot worse. I think he's one of the main reasons, you're right, for the club's overall shooting woes or shooting inconsistencies, because he has to wear a lot. There is a lot on his shoulders. But flat out, he needs to be better if he wants to help this team, which should be priority one, mm-hmm. and earn the contract he wants, which has sometimes been priority one this year, at least it seems.
Sure. Okay, last one for players. OG. He's getting a B for me.
He might actually officially have my highest. I did drop him down because I'm like, he doesn't deserve a B when Siakam earns a B minus. So it's a B minus for me. Sorry.
Okay, so it's a B for me. So I have Pascal Siakam at an A minus. OG's at a B. He's still a defensive player of the year candidate. He's been injured as of late. It's been difficult to maybe evaluate because mm-hmm. of recency bias, but he was being touted around as one of the highest wanted draft or players at the mm-hmm. trade deadline for a reason. He is still a young, significant part of this team, but I will say I could have given a higher grade, but I'm feeling a little bit of ick towards how things have gone as of late.
A little stinky?
A little bit, because I've seen a different side of OG this year in terms of what he wants or how he's carrying himself, and it's giving me a little bit of pause on like him as a player and maybe his priorities as well. And if he didn't want to be a part of this franchise, like, that kind of sucks to hear from a player that is an incredible talent. So I'm just sticking with a flat B.
I think it's frustrating because we don't see it. We don't like it. It's just like, what's going on with this guy? Like, why? If you were happier and if you were on the court, you could be in A territory. You're right. Could mm-hmm. be defensive player of the year if he was around, but he's not around. And we didn't know if he was going to be around. He's injured, but you got to be on the court to pass the grade, I guess.
Yeah, that's why incomplete currently.
So kind of incomplete, but, you know, the same story, right? Like him wanting more and him being unsatisfied with what he can give the Raptors, which could be an A contribution, but it hasn't been there for him injury. He may not want it to be there because he wants other things. And I just think he's one of the main sources of the overall frustration, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And for that reason, he drops down to a B minus for me.
Okay, so we're just doing those four players in terms of the starters because there's been a hybrid revolving door. But we'll pause and we'll do coaching, front office, bench, offense, defense, and player development.
I think the grades could plummet a little bit here.
No, like truly the next ones for me are not a passing average. How about that?
Okay.
Let's take a break.
We not got at Dartmouth, at least.
Oh, God, no. You'd be kicked out of school. You'd be sitting in the dean's office with these grades, okay? I might have had to do
that. Get you by at Heart Lake Secondary School.
I might have had to do that for my freshman fall. Had a tough start to the academic career. It was eye-opening. Kayla McGrath at 7, Carl Gunnarsson 7:30, Andrew Peters at 8, The Wake and Rake at 8:30. Send in your picks at 590-590. And on the other side, we got the A-List.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Lots of inner tie rod talk in the text line. 590-590.
I'm at the stage now where I don't think it's like,
I know it's
clearly
a real thing.
The tie rod is a thing. But is it the thing that the mechanic says, wow, your tie rod, like,
right.
Like you
his,
can't.
It's his crutch.
Yeah, it's like, I know I can get people with the tie rod.
I can get a quick $600 from you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'd like to see the tie rod.
There's a little gunk on that tie rod. I can make that thing squeaky clean.
Put a little WD-40 on it.
When it's new.
No, I'm understanding text line that, like, here's a good quote. If it's actually worn out, you did the right thing to change it because your wheel might come off or at least turn 90 degrees to the vehicle. You need to have it inspected, see if they're lying. You're right. I need to have it inspected, but part's been ordered.
if you didn't have it, you'd be like hyper aware of potholes on your way.
No, like today I took longer. I was later to arrive today because I was driving slower. Mm. So maybe that's a good thing.
It's not even about the tie rod. It's about peace of mind.
Anyway. Safety first, folks. Okay, LeBron James, what a guy, eh? He lives in his own world a little bit. He's the king.
He is the king.
He's been put on the podium quite a lot lately and asked lots of questions. And yesterday he was put in the same position and he was asked about possibly wanting to own an NBA team in the future, which okay. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the route that he goes. He's talking about Las Vegas as a spicy place that would be nice to bring a team. But listen to this interview and tell me what he forgets about.
I would love to, at some point, down the road on an NBA franchise and be able to, bring a winning franchise to a city. Like I said, Vegas is a really cool city and they're doing some great things in sports these days. Obviously, you see what the Aces are doing. You got the Raiders there. You got the Kings there, the hockey team. You got, they're doing a lot of great things down there. So, we will see what happens and go from there. I think it's the Kings, not the Kings.
Golden Knights.
Who?
The Golden Knights.
Golden Knights, yes. Kings is in LA, right?
Yep.
Kings are in LA.
In your building.
In your building.
He probably walks by the Kings dressing room every day.
He probably sees the Kings logo, honestly, up to 20 to 30 times a day when he's in that same building. You share a building with the Kings. And did you? I cut him off by accident, but he goes, two Kings in LA. Okay.
Ooh.
Come on.
Ooh.
But he forgets or just doesn't even recognize that the LA Kings are in your same arena. And you think that
they have banners.
They do.
Up.
They probably have hallways with photos of them in jerseys and memorabilia. And you don't ever think you crossed paths with someone on the
game. The old jersey, the retro jersey, which you've probably seen multiple times.
I bet he's probably worn one.
Is a literal crown.
Who's the most famous player on the Kings right now?
The LA Kings?
Yeah.
Drew Doughty?
So he's not seeing Drew Doughty in the hallway thinking,
that
guy doesn't play basketball.
He's definitely met some of the Kings, too. Like, there's no way he hasn't.
It's so embarrassing. And LA Kings quote tweeted this with a photo of LeBron James. And in the background, you see all of the Kings banners and retired jerseys. And it's him dunking. And they go, some roommates forget to do the dishes. Some roommates forget to take out the trash. Others forget you live there, too.
That's good. That is good.
Anyway, LeBron James might bring a team to Vegas, but the Kings won't be there.
I guess Bronny will always have a spot to play.
God. Okay, last one. I wish I could play some sort of audio or visual for this, but you can't. You just got to hear it. This weekend, so NCAA baseball is coming back. It's going to be fun. March Madness is around the corner, but the Air Force baseball team started their season this past weekend by parachuting onto the field. Parachuting onto the field.
It's pretty badass.
Pretty badass. That's the coolest thing I've seen in college sports, possibly. they're getting called up starting lineup. All right, at first base, Justin Cuthbert. And then he flies in from the sky with an American flag, parachutes into the middle of the field.
This has got to be, like, did they do the whole starting lineup?
I'll send you the clip.
I was going to say, that have to be, like,
it's
perfectly timed.
It's actually insane. And first of all, I don't understand how you can really, like, place a parachute. Like, what if there's a gust of wind? This guy ends up in the stands. I don't know either,
but they do. They pull that off.
I'm watching it right now on my screen. They're just landing it in the outfield.
Little gust of wind,
home.
And they end up in a 500 seat.
They're up there at the concession stand. Getting some loony dogs. Honestly, it's immaculate. It's incredible. Air Force baseball. I've already skyrocketed up my favorite NCAA sporting teams.
I mean, Jordan Romano's got the great light show. I don't know how that's going to look with the new. Maybe it'll be enhanced with
what
the renovations.
What if he parachuted off the CN Tower?
Exactly.
This is legitimately what these guys are doing.
You could not get better than that.
It's a bit scary.
Kind of reminds me. You watch Eastbound and Down?
No.
Kenny Powers? Oh, you got to watch that.
I haven't watched that.
That's really good.
Okay.
It's Kenny Powers-esque.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't comment on said statement.
But my comment is you need to watch that show. It's hilarious. But yeah, Jordan Romano now has to up his game.
He's got a septum piercing, but
Edwin Diaz got us.
He doesn't parachute onto the field.
No, he doesn't.
Speaking of Jordan Romano, other side of the break, we're going to get a check-in from Dunedin. Caitlin McGrath. She just wrote a great piece at The Athletic about Jose Berríos, who has changed legitimately almost every single part of his mechanics coming into next season.
And his look.
And his
dyed hair, goatee.
You wouldn't even recognize Jose Berríos.
Berríos is a new man.
If he parachuted onto the field, you'd think he's on the wrong field for the Toronto Blue Jays. You wouldn't recognize him. Caitlin McGrath joining us from Dunedin. That's next on The Fan Morning Show.